Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to Arauco's second quarter 2019 results conference call. Today with us, we have Mr. Gianfranco Truffello, CFO of Arauco. We would like to inform you that this event is being recorded and that all participants will be in listen-only mode during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are completed, there will be a question-and-answer session. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during the call, please press star zero to reach the operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that this presentation contains forward-looking statements that are based on the beliefs, assumptions, and expectations of management of the company based on currently available information. They involve risks, uncertainties because they relate to future events or expectations, and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of Arauco and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. For further discussion of these risks and uncertainties, investors should refer to the quarterly and annual Arauco filings with the Chilean CMF and the U.S. SEC. The company undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements due to new information or future developments. Now, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Gianfranco Truffello, CFO of Arauco. Mr. Gianfranco, you may begin your conference.
Okay, thanks everyone for attending this call for the results of the second quarter of 2019. So we will start in page three with the financial review of the company. Then we will talk about each business segment, followed by some discussions about cash flow and debt, and we will end up as usual with other events and Q&A session. So if we start with page four, we can see as a summary that our revenues went down from 1.39 billion to 1.35 billion. That is a 2.6% this quarter. Net income went down 54%. Or 68 million from 126 million in the first quarter to 57 million net income this quarter. And EBITDA went down 3.3% or roughly $10 million to $343 million. Regarding our net debt position, it went up out about 500 million from 4 billion to $4.5 billion. And our net leverage went up from 2.3 times to 2.9 times. Page five, now a little bit more about our decreasing revenues. It was only a 2.6% decrease. It was driven mainly by a decrease in the volume of sales in our pulp division. We had slightly lower prices, but basically was due to a decrease in volumes. This was offset by an increase in revenues of $28 million in our wood product divisions that was explained by higher panels and some timber sales volume, offset by a slight decrease in average prices. Regarding the percentage of sales, wood products accounted for 54% and pulp for 43% of sales. The rest is forestry and other sales. In terms of cost of sales, the cost of sales increased 2.8% or $26 million. The increase was basically explained by a $27 million increase in timber cost, basically due to the grading startup process and other costs, and also forestry labor cost that increased due to road investments and transportation expenses. This situation was compensated by lower maintenance cost during this quarter. In terms of unitary cost of sales for pulp, we had a decrease of 1% in softwood and hardwood, and a 2% increase in unbleached softwood pulp. This is basically due to the maintenance of the Constitución mill during the second quarter. Total cost of sales accounts for $966 million this quarter. Page six, we can see that our distribution costs were basically similar to last quarter at $143 million. We had a decrease in freight costs due to lower export sales, basically in pulp. And the same in administrative expenses, we had only a 3.5 increase in about $5 million to $146 million. And this is explained by some payments of software licenses in computer services and some slight increases in wages, salaries, and indemnities. In other income, we had a big increase here, almost 90% or $40 million. This is almost entirely explained by the gain obtained in the sale of our share in Puertos y Logística, a port that we had in Chile. We sold our 20% to Dubai Ports in $102 million, and we obtained accounting gain of $41 million. If we now go to page 7, we can see the whole net income. You can see the difference between the 126 and the 57. If you add all the operating expenses and revenues, you get more or less the $66 million difference. Then you have a positive impact in other income for the Puertos y Logística sale of almost $40 million, compensated by the tax paid for that operation, about $22 million. And then the rest is balanced in more financial costs due to the higher debt position after the issuance of the $1 billion bond in April, plus the repurchase of $100 million in the 2019 bonds that impacted the financial cost. And then we have exchange rate differences of negative 9.3 compared to positive 2.1. It's simply explained by the depreciation of the Chilean peso that provided a loss because of our U.S. dollar accounting. We move now to page 8 and see a little bit of perspective of our EBITDA. We can see that it has been more or less stable during this the last three quarters. We got 343, similar to the last quarter of 2018, and the first quarter was 355. This is a margin of about 25% over revenues. And if we look at the EBITDA divided by division, $200 million came from pulp, with Prog 75 and forestry 56. Regarding the change from last quarter, you can see that the biggest difference is a reduction in $46 million in the pulp division EBITDA because of the decrease in volume and some decrease in sales price. But this was compensated by an increase in wood products EBITDA and the EBITDA coming from the one-time effect of the sale of Puertos and Logística, which is about $40 million effect. Now, if we move to page 10 and we start with the review of the different business segments in pulp, we can start looking at the graph of the indexes of pulp prices in Europe and China. Now we have incorporated the China index of prices, and we can see the evolution of the prices going down through the year, starting in November last year. And we can see that prices for China and are at this moment in August, the indexes are about 570 for softwood and a little bit below 500 for hardwood. The current spread is about $90 between each fiber, and about last quarter, last conference call, it was about $16. If we look at the European prices, of course, those are list prices, and we have numbers of about $900 and $800 per ton. Regarding the demand variation, we can see here the effects of the trade war between the U.S. and China, and the global market has decreased 3.6% compared to last year, and you can see the effect in China, 4%, but also a big decrease in West Europe of 11% in pulp demand. That, of course, has impacted the amount of inventories held by producers, and you can see there that the current days of supply is 43 days for softwood and 64 days for hardwood. It's a small decline from the peak of 67 days that was observed in March. These high levels of inventories are around 2.5, 2.6 million more than the end of 2017, and about 40% of this is explained by a destocking process of inventories from clients to producers. So about 1.2, 1.3 is really the increase of the total inventories in the market. If we go to page 11, we can see there the decrease in the EBITDA of pulp. 18.8%, and of course, a 50% decrease compared to the second quarter of 18, which was a very good quarter in terms of pricing. You can see there that the decrease in prices is 2.3% and a 9% decrease in volume, but compared to the second quarter of 18 is a 16% in prices and a 13% in volume. As we all know, the market scenario continued deteriorating the second quarter. You can see in the graph the prices. We at the end of the first quarter, we had a slight increase in prices, which at the end of the day wasn't the trend, and prices went down sharply from April to June. In the case of softwood, it went down from 710 that was at the end of March. It went up a little bit in April, but then it went down to 620 at the end of June. The same situation more or less happened to the hardwood prices, where they stood at 570 net prices in China at the end of June. Of course, this is basically due to historically high inventory levels of some producers in China, basically. The situation in Europe, prices were also down, even though a little bit less than in Asia at the end of the second quarter. In terms of in page 12, we can see our production and sales volume for the second quarter. We produced 966,000 tons, and we sold 850,000 tons, thus increasing our inventories a little bit. Still, they're up compared to Q1, but still at manageable levels, and they're already down a little bit in July. In terms of our production maintenance stoppages in this year, in January we had the stoppage of Noaldea for 11 days, February, Licancel, 11 days, in March, Alto Paraná for 22 days, and during this quarter we had the Constitución pulp mill stoppage for 18 days, 355,000 tons of capacity, and the Arauco Line 1 for 10 days. In page 13, now looking a little bit further, after after June, we can see that the volatility continued because of the trade war between the U.S. and China, and thus hurting the demand for pulp. And also we are in a low demand season that also produces low demand. So we are still high inventory levels, low paper demand, prices continue to go down, and currently the August prices were closed at more or less $500 for hardwood and a little bit up for softwood at $590, coming from $580. Right now the situation is difficult, but we think that there's some pressure for prices for not going lower than this price, basically because currently the Chinese producers are operating below their marginal cost, so the prices are below the marginal cost. They rely on imports of chips that are currently about $140 BDMT. That translates about $400 only for wood, and that means that they are basically losing money at these prices. So, and that capacity is estimated to be around 7 million tons. So we think also that clients of paper don't want to push prices further low, because if those capacity starts to close very quickly, prices could rebound very, very fast. So I think there's some pressure of not decreasing prices anymore. We'll see how the quarter ends up and the rest of the year. Inventories are still high. So we don't see a lot of pressure for prices going up, but still some containment of prices going down. Also, there was a recent announcement of an increase in the tariff to the U.S. from 5% to 10% of imported softwood, so that also could bring some relief in prices. Regarding our maintenance for the third quarter and the fourth quarter, we have the Valdivia shutdown that is longer than normal for 48 days because of the dissolving pulp project. That mill has 550,000 tons of capacity. Then we have the Arauco Line 2 in October for 15 days. And Montes del Plata should stop for 10 days in November. that capacity of 780 is the 50% capacity of the mill. Worth mentioning here that the Valdivia mill won't lose any production during the year because they have more capacity than the permit, so they can, and that permit is an annual limit, so they can recuperate capacity. They have been producing at higher speed, so they will produce the 550 for the whole year. So we expect production for the second half to be a little bit higher than half one. Now in page 14, if we move to wood production, to the wood business, we can see that EBITDA went up from $64 to $75 million. That's a 23% increase. As you can see in panels, we had the biggest impact with an increase in volume of 8%, with a slight decrease in average prices. In solid wood, we had a 6% increase. And in solid wood, we had a 2.2 increase of volume and 2.2 decrease in pricing. So basically what we saw in the quarter was that Latin American markets were stable second quarter, and MDF supply remained at high levels. So that affected the Brazilian market. During the quarter, we had a slight improvement in Argentina, because the exchange rate stabilized a little bit. Of course, we already know that changed right now, but during the quarter, we had a slightly better market in Argentina. In some timber, we had lower dynamics in the market, especially because we had more supply coming from Brazil, Canada, and Europe. Still worth mentioning that at this moment, some timber results weren't still not that much affected by the Chinese and U.S. trade war, which is now being affected more, as we felt, especially in Asia. Plywood market followed the same trend as some timber, showing a lower demand in most of the market, again hit by the oversupply from Brazil, China, and Chile. Now moving to slide 15, we can see the production and sales for panels, some timber, and plywood. We can see that production went up from 1.4 to 1.5 in panels, and sales were slightly higher from 1.37 to 1.45. In some timber, also we had a slight increase in sales and production stable during this quarter compared to the last one. And we had a higher production in plywood and basically the same sales volume in plywood. Now moving to the outlook for wood products in page 16. In North America, where we sell 56% of our production, we see a positive market in the United States for next quarter, especially in particle board due to some lower supply from competitors because some fires that affected some of our competitors. And we expect that the seasonality would be better in the Northern Hemisphere. In terms of remanufactured products, we expect the demand to continue to be good due to seasonality and less supply from China because of the duties. Plywood sales volume is expected to be healthy in North America, but we still expect some of the oversupply from Brazil and Chile to keep affecting prices. You can see there the housing start index rather flat at 1.2 million houses per year. That was the housing start from July. Now if we move to page 17, now looking at Central and South America, which represents 29% of our sales, we are looking to a challenging environment in Brazil due to a slow economy and sluggish consumption of panels and more production coming from some other competitors. In spite of that, we expect the second half to be a little bit better. In Chile, as usual, the outlook remains positive, expecting the same, more or less, sales volume. But plywood will remain a challenge because there's some other oversupply from other producers in Chile. In Argentina, we all know the volatility hit another milestone due to the primaries that brought a result that wasn't expected. So the depreciation is decreasing our margins denominated in US dollars. And also, some customers are more conservative, resulting in some decrease in sales. We will have this volatility, we expect, until the elections in October. And in Asia, which is 12% of our demand for the products, we're facing the biggest uncertainty because of the trade war now is affecting really the market in some timber, especially that we sell in this market. But we have seen some shutdowns announced by some suppliers, so we expect some positive news from the supply side. And in Europe, which is only 3% of our sales, we expect very low demand for the rest of the year. Europe is roughly not growing, and probably entering into a recession, affecting by the global situation in the economy and the Brexit situation. So we don't expect any good news from our sales in Europe. In Middle East, demand is more stable, but we expect some deterioration in pricing. Now, looking at the free cash flow on page 18, we can see that we had quite a big negative free cash flow of about $416 million. This is due basically to a slightly lower EBITDA, but basically because we had the payment of taxes this quarter for the results of 2018, which were very good. So we had to pay about $200 million in taxes. And the other thing that impacted was that we paid dividends of $187 million during the quarter. And it was roughly compensated by a lower net capex, which is explained by a little bit higher capex due to investment, compensated by the positive income of $100 million because of the sales of Puertos and Logística. So at the end of the day, our cash flow, our net debt went up because of this negative free cash flow plus other effects from $4 billion to $4.5 billion. If we look at page 19, the evolution of our leverage going up from our lowest point, which was at the end of 18, from 1.9, going up from 2.3 and now 2.9, the main effect was an increase in net debt, but also a decrease in last 12 months adjusted EBITDA of 11% due to the lowest quarter in EBITDA, mainly due to pulp prices. So our cash flow, cash and cash equivalents, of course, went up because we issued debt in April. So the net increase was about $500 million. Our long-term debt increased by $1 billion because of the debt issuance. And that increased the total debt from $4.7 to $5.7 billion. So our cash position at the end of the quarter was $1.25 billion, which is a very good level for the CapEx program that we are facing at this moment. In page 20, we can see our debt amortization schedule, and now this is after the debt issuance of the week in April, so we have to pay for the remaining part of the year $450 million, divided in $200 million more or less in bank loans. The main part of those bank loans are $136 million in Montes de Plata, about $80 million or a little bit half of that is the normal amortizations that they do in their structured debt, and the rest is short-term debt that they roll over every like 90 days, and the rest is $43 million of paid in leasings and some small payments in Argentina. In terms of bond obligations, the biggest part was the remaining part of the 2019 bonds that after the repurchase, so $170 million that, of course, those were paid at the end of July already, and some amortizations of local bonds, $23 million, and interest and local and U.S. bonds of $50 million. As you can see, the level of amortization is about $400 million for the next 5 years, and we have some long-term amortizations after that. Now going to material facts and news. First of all, on page 22, our main two projects continue to advance, and now the dissolving pulp project is about 85% construction completed. And now we're going to start the big stoppage of Valdivia at the end of September, and most of the works will be done at that time. So we expect to be ready to have the capacity to produce dissolving pulp probably in January of 2019. Of course, we will keep the flexibility to switch to paper grade or in case prices are the other way around. Page 23, the MAPA project now has a 13% accumulated advance as of July. The earth moving works have 60% completed, and we started in July the civil and electromechanical works in order to be prepared to receive the start receiving the equipment that is being manufactured basically in Europe. And at this moment, we have 1,300 people employed as of June, and we expect to have a peak in August 2020 of about 8,000 people working in the site. We expect the Line 3 to start at the second quarter of 2021, and at that time, Line 1, which is 300,000 tons of capacity, we will shut down. This is a project of $2.35 billion and is basically financed by debt and ECA financing, bonds, and our cash flow. So this is what I had in my presentation, and now I would like to open for any Q&A that you have at this moment. Thanks.
The floor is now open for questions from investors and analysts. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone at this time. If at any point your question is answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Questions will be taken in the order that they are received. We do ask that when you pose your question, please pick up your handset to provide optimum sound quality. Please hold while we poll for questions. And our first question today comes from George Staphos with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Gianfranco. Thank you for all the details. I had a couple of questions to the extent that you can comment on commercial activity and really the degree to which demand materialized as you'd expected. Inventories rose roughly 115,000, 120,000 metric tons based on your production and sales data. Was that in line with your expectations? Was demand a bit weaker than you had expected? Any color there would be helpful. And also, in your material, I think in the press release, you mentioned that competition remained relatively strong, which is obviously no surprise to anybody on this call. Can you comment whether that level of competitive activity has remained as intense as what you saw in 2Q into the first few weeks of the third quarter? Thank you. And I had one or two follow-ons.
Okay, thanks, George. Of course, yes, we were a little bit surprised about the movement in price, especially after March, that we were seeing some increases in pricing. So it was a little weaker than we thought, of course, and that explain basically the difficulty of sales during the second quarter, and that's why our inventory, as you mentioned, went up about 100,000 tons, let's say, from March to June. Already gone down a little bit in July, but it still is not as high. It's about a 1.4 month of production, which is much lower than other producers in relative terms. And also, this is total inventory, considering the inventory that we're having on mills, in the way for the main markets and all that. So I think it's still manageable, and we expect to normalize it through the coming month. It's already gone down a little bit in July. Regarding the competitiveness of the market, of course, we see it as strong. I mean, everyone wants to sell their volume. And there has been some commercial strategies from our competitors offering some special packages, and we think that the competition will continue. We have seen it every time, every quarter. We see everyone competing, trying to put their volumes on the market. So I don't think there's any change in less competitiveness at this moment.
Thank you. Two last ones, and I'll turn it over. The $41 million gain from the sale of Puerto C Logistica, was that in your expectations going into second quarter, or was that a bit of a positive surprise for you? And also, can you comment at all on what you're seeing in the dissolving pulp markets? Our research suggests that also has been a very challenged market. You'll get some benefit, obviously, because Valdivia is not coming up until January, but can you comment about the state of the markets in dissolving pulp relative to, say, your expectations from a quarter or two ago? And I'll turn it over from there. Thank you.
Okay. Well, yes, it was a positive surprise because, I mean, we were not looking actively to sell the company, and this was an offer made by Dubai Ports to the main shareholder of the port. So it was a positive surprise also because it was a good price. So we sold at that moment. So we weren't expecting that when it materialized at the beginning of the second quarter. Regarding the dissolving pulp market, yes, prices have gone down. Currently, pricing is about 770, something like that per ton, going down from probably levels of 900. And this is expected as price of paper grade pulp goes down. There's some adjustment, but still the margin is quite good. It's about $250. I think it's competitive. If this Valdivia mill will be ready now, we'll be producing dissolving because our break-even is much lower than that. So, and we'll see how the market is at the beginning of next year. There's some swing capacity in dissolving and paper grade, so that tends to compensate at some point. So we will start producing probably at the beginning of next year, doing some tests. We need to adjust the quality, test it with our clients. So we won't have 100% production of dissolving 2020.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Thiago Lofiego with Bradesco BBI. Please go ahead.
Thank you, gentlemen. I have two questions. The first one, Gianfranco, you mentioned Chinese producers are underwater. But have you seen any relevant capacity adjustments there or not yet? If you have, do you have any numbers that you can share with us? That would be much appreciated. Second question, back to the competitive environment, is that alcohol and maybe other players now losing market share for Suzano now that they are apparently fully back to the market, even giving out aggressive price discounts for larger volumes? So just to understand, how is that ALCO positioning this environment? Do you think losing market share is a natural process given the lost market share that Suzano had and now they're trying to regain? What are your thoughts about that? Thank you.
Well, regarding the Chinese producer being underwater, that's what we have heard. We haven't heard of any shutdown yet. I mean, probably it could happen in the coming quarters if prices continue to be low and prices of chips coming from I don't know, Vietnam, Australia, Chile stay at the same price level because the cost of wood very high and they will be with marginal cost higher than prices. But right now we haven't seen any major shutdowns. I think everyone will be looking at what happens in the coming month and that's why I think that if prices continue to go down we will see that kind of reduction in and there's a big capacity there. In terms of market share, I don't think we're losing market share. I haven't seen any big movement in that. I mean, we are some of clients, as mentioned before, are moving out from Suzano because they used to have Fibria and Suzano, and they don't want to have only one supplier. So we have found new customers, and since we are selling roughly our production, we will sell it through the year. We think that we won't lose any market share. And just to remember that we are in the worst part of the season in terms of demand, and so we should expect some pickup in demand as we enter the summer season, especially in the fourth quarter. So I think situation could improve a little bit. It would, of course, depend on the tweets from Mr. Trump and the fight with China and the effect of that in the economy. But at least seasonality will be over.
Thank you, Jim Franklin.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Marshall Farid with J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I have a couple of follow-up questions. The first one, Gianfranco, you mentioned that you expect production in the second half to be slightly higher than in the first half. You also mentioned that you expect inventories to kind of normalize over the next months. So basically, I think we can expect some sales to improve in the second half versus first half, right? And as Thiago mentioned, Suzano is also adopting a strategy of increasing sales in the second half as well. In case you don't find a market window to sell these extra volumes that you're going to have in the second half, would you consider adjusting production, and what would be the best way to do that in the second half or maybe in the beginning of next year? And then my second question on the MAPA project, can you just remind us what is the completion rate so far? And how confident that you are that the project is going to start up in the second quarter of 2021, and if the cycle continues to negatively surprise, would you reschedule the startup of MAPA, or that's not something that is considered by management at this point? Thank you very much.
Okay, so thanks, Marcio. Yes, I mean our. Our estimate of a little bit of increase in production is based on that we had more capacity shut down in the first half due to annual stoppages. In the case of the big stoppage of Valdivia, we have the flexibility of producing more on a monthly basis to comply with the 550,000 tons. So our expectation is to produce a little bit more if you don't have any unscheduled interruptions in production. Of course, we would like to normalize our levels of inventory, which is not too high, and that would mean that we'll have to sell more volume. We already sold more volume in July, as we're normalizing some sales that were not obtained at the end of June. So I don't expect any problem selling that volume. We always sell our production. And regarding that, we don't have any intentions of shutting down capacity. We operate and we make money at this level of prices, and we have always tried to produce at 100% capacity. We don't have any plans of adjusting production. At this moment, we don't think it's a good business for us. And regarding MAPA, the advance is 13% at this moment. We still expecting a startup in 2021. Everything is working as expected. We are still at the beginning of the project anyway, 13%, but we expect to continue on a good track. And, of course, we don't have any intention to reschedule the project. It doesn't make sense. Even if prices are at this level, it's much more costly to have a mill idle without producing than stop producing. And we expect that prices will be better after at least 1 year of normalized demand. So we don't have any expectation of rescheduling the project because of market conditions.
Okay, thank you very much.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one. And our next question comes from Chelsea Colon with Aegon. Please go ahead.
Hi, and thank you for the call. I just have a couple of clarification-type questions. First of all, in the wood products, Central and South America represents about a third of the business, but can you give us a rough breakdown of how much of that is Brazil versus Argentina and Chile? And then secondly, I just wanted to confirm, is the about $102 million that you received from the asset sale already included in your cash balance as of 2Q?
Yes, starting from the question of the sale of Puloxa, Puloxa, yes, the cash was obtained in April. So at the end of Q2, we had that cash, $100 million in our balance. And regarding our sales, I will say that the main part of the sales to Latin America is probably Brazil. Then Chile and after Argentina. Argentina, I think it's probably lower than it's about 12 to 13% probably of those sales, and the majority is Brazil. I don't have the exact number here, but in our presentations in our website, there is the more distribution of sales, and we can send you that information. But I would say that basically Brazil comes first, then probably Chile, and then Argentina. And Argentina is currently quite low because of the low demand in Argentina, and our mills are not working at full capacity in Argentina.
And the fluff pulp that you produce in Argentina, is that entirely exported?
No, it's basically sold in Argentina and a little bit in Brazil. No, not exported, not yet. But depending now on the tariff to the U.S., and now that 10% is affecting softwood, fluff, and paper grade. And also because of the devaluation in Argentina, that could open a window of exporting fluff. We're not currently doing that, but could be a new way of delivering fluff to China if the margins are okay.
So how much does Argentina represent of your pulp business?
It's a little bit below 10%. It's 350 compared to 3.98. So it's about 8.5, 9% of capacity.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And our next question is a follow-up from George Staphos with Bank of America. Please go ahead. Mr. Staphos, your line is live.
Thank you for taking my call. In the plywood markets, Gianfranco, can we talk a bit about what you're seeing early in the third quarter? Obviously, from the slide deck, it would appear that you had some build in inventory when we look at production versus sales. Should we expect that the markets will be more competitive in third quarter versus second quarter, especially as you're moving product to North America? Would that be incorrect and why? And then can you comment in terms of how the grailing project is coming up? You know, the markets in MDP and medium density fiber have been, you know, somewhat soft this year. How would you characterize the market's ability to take that additional production and absorb it at a margin that is, you know, acceptable to you? Thank you for taking these questions.
Okay. Yes, regarding the plywood market, I think that the only good news that you see in the economy probably is in the U.S. So we expect that demand for products in the U.S. would benefit some timber panels and also plywood. We have some other oversupply in Chile that is producing some price effects in the U.S. and also the European market is not very well. So depending on the balance of supply and demand, we think that we could have a better scenario in the future in plywood. But basically, because of the best situation of the U.S. economy compared to other markets. Regarding the grailing project, the grailing project started its ramp-up process in about April, and the total capacity is obtained about in a year. So it's in the middle of the ramp-up. It's not producing full capacity, of course. But the situation is good because there were some problems of some mills of Georgia-Pacific that decreased demand in the region, especially in the south of the U.S., and that helped increase prices of particle board. So we have a better pricing scenario, but the mill is still ramping up, and so some of the benefits are being cut by our mills in the south of the U.S. rather than grailing yet, because they're not full efficient in order to capture all that. but we think that the production in grayling probably will reach 50% of capacity this year. So about 400,000 ton cubic meters of particle board coming to the market, and that with a shortage of production of other mills is a well balanced market for getting good prices.
Gianfranco, if I can just ask a follow-on. So I assume you're referring to CrossFit in terms of the closure. Is that correct, or is there another adjustment in supply from competitors that you're referring to? And roughly speaking, how much demand did that create for you incrementally relative to your expectations? Thanks again, and good luck in the quarter.
I didn't cut very well the name of the mill that you said.
The CrossFit mill.
CrossFit mill? No, I don't know the name of it. I heard that there was about two mills of Georgia-Pacific, one affected by a fire, and another one that was closed because of market conditions, I think. But I don't know exactly if that is the one that you're referring
to. Nonetheless, what would you estimate the incremental demand that's been created for Arauco from these closures has been? Thank you.
And I don't have the exact number because, I mean, it depends. I mean, some of that demand is cut by our mill, some other one is cut by our competitors. So I don't have a real exact number of that increasing demand.
Okay.
Overall, what we have seen is
the market is. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
But you see the market is balanced, actually, at this juncture going forward.
Yes, we see it balanced, and that is reflected in better pricing for particle board.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks.
And our next question comes from Patrick O'Connell with AllianceBernstein. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I was curious on your comments about the funding of MAPA. You spoke about the export financing, and the bond deal was completed earlier this year. The final component was free cash flow. But given the kind of the current environment for pulp prices, how would you expect to bridge any potential shortfall in free cash flow to fund the MAPA project? Should we think about contributions from the parent, additional asset sales, or other kind of capital markets activity? Thanks.
Yes, of course. Initially, we thought that a bigger portion will be contributed by cash flow of operation because we're expecting a better pricing scenario. We still have to see what will happen in 2020, but we have a good cash position to finance this year and probably part of 2020. And depending on pricing for 2020 and 21, we'll probably need to get more debt. And we need to find out if our leverage is manageable, depending on pricing, and we will find out what we can do. I mean, we have the possibility of getting probably equity from the parents or selling some assets that are not core. But at this moment, we are evaluating the situation for projection for 2020, which is kind of difficult to estimate right now because of the volatility. But we had a good cash position for financing the project at this moment. So we're not in a hurry, but probably it could be a good moment to go to the market because of the good rates for financing long term. But we have a lot of tools to manage our leverage in terms of our parent and some assets that we could manage to dispose.
And just on the leverage question, when we met, I think, earlier this year, you thought about, I guess, again, pulp prices were in a different environment, but peak leverage during the MAPA expansion would be 3.5 or so times. That seems like you're going to go above those limits. Is that kind of still the target or, again, depends on where you foresee pulp prices and that would drive any equity contribution from the parent?
Yeah, of course, that peak number of 3.5, I think, is going to be higher than that. I mean, we with the evolution of the last 12 months, EBITDA could be lower because we are taking out good quarters of the 18, will go down, and net debt is going up because of the negative free cash flow of the investment. So right now we're expecting that net leverage will be over 3.5, But we think that it's manageable. The rating agencies know the evolution of leverage, and we think that it's still manageable. We need to see it quarter by quarter, and if we see that it goes up more than expected, we will find ways to decrease the net debt. And we need to find out what happened with prices. I think that the end of this year we will have a much better estimation of the evolution after the high season of the fourth quarter. And there we will see if prices are rebounding or are going to stay similar part of the 2020.
Got it. Much appreciated. Thanks, guys.
And our next question comes from Leopoldo Silva with Larendio. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning, Gianfranco. I have a real quick one in the wood division. I see you had a 10% margin EBITDA. Would you say that the grailing is contributing to that, meaning operating higher than that, or is it dragging your EBITDA? I mean, your margin at least. And you mentioned you expect to reach 50% of rate, of running rate in grailing. When will you expect to achieve a 100%? That's my question.
Leopoldo, yes. Margins are currently at 10%. It is lower than average, and this is a reflection of the market conditions all over the world, which are weaker. Grayling currently is not doing a lot here because it's still in the ramp-up process. So probably the margins are low, still low because production is not near full capacity. We expect to produce 50% more or less the whole year. So that reflects that the project is currently at above 50%, but we will get probably 100% in a year time. So we expect probably next year, April, for that part we could be on 100%. There's a new mill, a big mill, a lot of technology, and we need to produce good quality of products. And so there's a lot of work right now in doing a good ramp up that was estimated to be about a year. So we expect probably next year, at the end of during the second quarter, we could be 100% capacity.
Okay, and when it is ready? What did you model it with the EBITDA margin? What would be a normal cycle EBITDA margin for the mill?
Well, depends on pricing, of course, but I think that mill is higher than average. Just to give you a sense, I think the normal times, the whole business could be like a 15%. And my guess is that the grain is above that. So let's say it probably could be like 20% margin on normal terms. But it depends on a lot of factors. This mill is closer to customers, so probably it should have a higher margin than the other mills. It's a newer, a bigger mill with economies of scale, so probably margins could be a little bit up of 20% on a normal business cycle.
Great. That's very clear. Thanks very much.
And our next question is a follow-up from George Staphos with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Gianfranco, two last ones from me. Can you comment how much hardwood production has been coming from Valdivia as you've been doing the ultimate shift from softwood to dissolving pulp at that mill this year? Would it be around 300,000 tons plus or minus? And then obviously it's a flex mill. You'll be able to swing from one product to another if you choose. What would be the normal lead time? You bring the mill up, say, in dissolving pulp, it hits in the first quarter of 2020, and at some point you decide you'd like to go back to paper grade. Can you remind us what would be the normal conversion time to go back to paper grade capacity again? Thanks and good luck in the quarter.
Okay, the production of hardwood or softwood of Valdivia depends on market conditions and also supply of wood. So it depends a lot. But normally we produce more or less half and half, depending on price differential and also energy, because when you produce softwood, you produce more energy. And that depends on energy in prices of energy in Chile. So I don't have the exact number, but roughly we'll be producing half and half. And now regarding the switch from dissolving to paper grade, we don't have experience in that. It should be not very slow. I will guess days, but we haven't done it yet. It depends on the quality, on the contracts that we'll have with clients. It's not as easy that to shut down production and go to paper grade. It will depend on inventories, the arrangement with clients. So I don't know exactly right now how we'll do it. We will start looking at once we start producing and getting contract with customers. But my expectation that moving from dissolving to paper grade shouldn't be a very big loss in production.
Thank you very much.
And our next question comes from Marshall Farid with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just a quick follow-up on my side. I know we spoke about the dissolving pulp mill. I'm just trying to understand how should we think about the commercial strategy for dissolving pulp? We are probably 6 months before we start producing the first bale. But, do you have a guidance in terms of how much dissolving pulp you want to sell in the first and second and maybe third year of operation? And when can we expect you to kind of reach, full dissolving pulp production within a year at the Valdivia mill? Thank you.
Marcel, it's hard to tell right now. I mean, as I mentioned, we will start producing at the beginning of next year. We will need to reach our targets of quality to get send test samples to customers. So right now, I don't have a clear answer, and also will depend on pricing scenario. I mean, the gap between dissolving and paper grade. So I cannot give you a correct answer right now. It depends on volumes and in quarters. I think we'll have a better sense once we start producing, probably, let's say, March. We will have a more good sense of our production for the 2020.
Great. Thank you.
And our next question comes from Sebastian Ramirez with Bank Chile. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Congrats on the results. Just a quick follow-up question in terms of assets that are eligible for sale. We've seen other players within the industry that are selling forestry assets right now, are in the middle of that process. And I would like to know if you have analyzed that within your forest base in Chile or other places in Latin America. Is there an option if the prices are attractive in the current transactions that you will use that as a point of leverage, or is something that is strategic for you and it's out of the question? That would be mine.
You know that we have a very big forest base. I mean, we have over 1 million hectares of plantations, and most of it is in Chile. The experience that we have selling forestry assets, the most recent one was in 2014. We sold 11,000 hectares for $90 million, so at a very good pricing. We sold it to an investment fund. And I think we have some other pieces of land that are not strategic, they're not supplying this, mainly our mills, that could be analyzed for selling. I don't have an exact number right now. This is one thing that we'll be looking at if the leverage continues to go up. But at this moment, I don't have a number for you. But since we have a very big amount of hectares, that number could be meaningful. And regarding other industrial assets, this not so much. I mean, we have another port, Puerto Coronel, but it's kind of strategic for us. And so I would say the biggest chunk could be for selling part of our plantations to investment funds and getting to some type of contract for the supply that we need for meals, but not very big in terms of industrial assets, more in forestry.
Got it.
And our next question is a follow-up from Leopoldo Silva with LarrNDL. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, Gianfranco again. Just very quick, you mentioned that your ramp-up at Valdivia might see the usual, face some time, some delays. Would you be open to delay the ramp-up if your leverage is too high as a means of not of keep pouring in cash flow and perhaps be motivated by economic in order to deleverage? Or and regarding leverage again, would you be open to cut the dividend to COPEC? And have you done it before in leverage high leverage cycles? That's my question.
Well, first of all, no, I think the Valdivia mill, I mean, could have some less production of dissolving because we will be like testing the quality, but that means that we will be doing some campaigns of paper grade. We don't expect any loss in production, I mean, total production of, let's say, paper and dissolving. And the CapEx has already been made, most of it, so there's no sense of delaying the startup. It will mean less cash flow from our sales of product of Valdivia. So we don't expect any delays because of market conditions for the Valdivia. And regarding dividends, we haven't cut our dividend policy since I remember. And right now we're not looking at it, but it could be a possibility, but it's not in our intention right now to cut down dividends. We will look at it as a tool, but we need to analyze that with our parent company.
Okay, thanks very much.
And this concludes the question and answer section. At this time, I would like to turn the floor back to Mr. Gianfranco Truffello for any closing remarks.
Okay, thanks all for attending the call. We will have our next conference call for the third quarter of this year, I think probably in November. So we will send you the press release and give you the directions for connecting the call. Thank you again, and feel free to send us any follow-up questions to our investor relations department. Thanks. Bye-bye.
This concludes today's presentation. You may disconnect your lines at this time and have a wonderful day.